Hello and welcome to this edition of DEcast. My name's Rob Bagby. I'm a developer evangelist for Microsoft Corporation, and this is part two of a multi-part series where I'm building out an application from scratch that illustrates a lot of the functionality of Windows Azure and some of the Azure services. In part one, we went ahead and created a cloud service project. We had a web role in there. We built our simple Hello World example. We ran it. We debugged it inside of the developer fabric, development fabric. We also created our Windows Azure account and got our token configured and did all that good stuff. And we created a hosting project, and we deployed our project out to the cloud and ran it from the cloud. In part two, we're going to start working with the Azure Table Storage. And so we're going to start with working with it inside of the developer storage on our local machine, not connecting to the cloud. And at the very end, we'll go ahead and connect this up to the cloud. So with that, let's just get started. This is not a UI-centric portion of this series. So we're just going to build out a couple web pages to work with it. We're not going to worry too much how they look, because in later sessions, we're going to make this a little bit nicer by moving into Silverlight. So let's just go ahead and add in a couple of just ASP.NET pages. I'm going to go ahead and add a new item. Let's add a web form. We'll call this viewwines.aspx. Let me add another one called addwine.aspx. Let's go ahead and add in the user interface to this. So viewwines is going to be simple. We're just going to add in a grid view. And we'll just call this a wine grid view. Run add equals server, and we're good to go. Let's add a break, and let's go ahead and add a button. I do that 100 times. ID equals, and that will be, let's add in a button to add wines, because we're not going to have any wines to begin with, so we're going to use this button to redirect over to our add wine page. And so let's just set that to run at equals server, and let's go ahead and set its text to be add wine. And we're good to go. So that page is all, UI is all done. Add wine, this could be time consuming, so I actually have a code snippet to build these out, build out at least the table for my wines. And let me just kind of move this down and I'll show you what I did. I just added in a very simple table with a couple rows, five rows, one to expose a text box for a wine ID, another one for a wine name, vintage, bottle price, and the wine label with a file upload. Okay, if you want to see it in split, we'll see it as it runs up into the browser. Now I'm going to go ahead and set a break here. Let me just add a button. And this will be our save button. And we'll just call it save button. Run at equals server, and we'll just say text equals save, and that should do it for that. And so we've got the two pages coded up, and they're looking pretty good. So let me just close these guys out. Now we want to start doing the real work here, which is working with table storage. So, oops, let me just plant that again. So it's actually. Before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about table storage. First thing is that these aren't tables in the traditional sense with rows and columns. These are, I refer to them as table-like structures. They work like this. You've got your storage account. A storage account can have 0 to n number of tables in it. And these tables store things called entities. And entities are just, they're kind of like a property bag. They store a bunch of name-value properties, but those name-value pairs are typed. That's one of the differences that we have between maybe some of the other cloud offerings, is that our properties actually do have a type, and we have a few types that we do support. So again, you've got a storage account that has many tables, zero to many tables. Tables store any number of entities, and those entities are store name value pair properties, typed properties. Now, it's also important to note that we're not enforcing a schema. And so you can have the same table can have two totally different entities inside of them. The developer can choose to control that from their code, but Azure Table Storage does not enforce schemas by default. The last thing to really note is that every entity that goes into a table has three required properties. You have to have a partition key, a row key, and a timestamp. The timestamp we'll manage internally. We use that thing for things like optimistic concurrency. But the other two, you're in charge of making sure they're set. So whenever you add an entity has to have a partition key and a row key. And it's important because of their functionality. The two of them together form the unique key. So that's really the function of the row key is in conjunction with the partition key, it forms the unique key for an entity. The partition key is important because it's how we define which entities have to be partitioned together. We're going to move your data around to different nodes to ensure scalability. But you direct to us which records need to stay together, which entities need to stay together by giving them the same partition key. And so both of those, you have to be careful to set both of those for every entity you want to add. And we'll see that as we go forward. Now, I did a screencast which illustrated the REST API and the role of ADO.NET Data Services and our storage client in pretty much ad nauseum. But for those of you who didn't get the chance to see it, I'm going to summarize it in a relatively quick pace. But just know there's a 25-minute screencast under DECast on that subject. So to kind of summarize, the goal of ADO.NET services was to allow you to easily expose and consume data services, to consume these RESTful services. We wanted to make it easy for you, so we wanted to kind of abstract away the complexity of making HTTP calls and doing the serialization and deserialization. So we give you a server library to allow you to easily expose them, and then a bunch of client libraries to allow you to easily consume these services, including one library called the .NET client library. And so that's the client library you'd use in such as like an ASP.NET application. Now, the ADO.NET Data Services team implemented, table storage team implemented the REST API that's compliant with the ADO.NET Services API. But there were some differences. And one of the notable differences is that shared key light and shared key authentication. So we authenticate every call to table storage to make sure that you are authorized to make those calls. And so we use a shared key authentication. And so because we have these additions or this additional functionality, the Windows Azure SDK shipped with this sample application called the Storage Client. And that extends the client library, the .NET client library, adding functionalities such as signing these requests. That's kind of enough theory. Let's get into it and do it. I just wanted to kind of set the stage before we jumped in. The first thing I need to do if I want to work with Azure Table Storage in this means is to create a type that we're going to deserialize to and that we're going to use to serialize to, and we're going to send information across the wire. So this represents our entity that we're going to be adding into and pulling out of Table Storage. So I'm just going to go ahead and create one called Wine. So I'm going to add a class, and I'm just going to call this Wine. .cs, and let's just go ahead and add in some properties. Now I thought I had a nice little code snippet to add in these properties. I'm just going to go ahead and add them by hand. I'm going to pause the video while I add in these properties because this is kind of mundane work. Okay, so I've added in the properties, and so you see I've got a short wine name, vintage, wine label URL, bottle price, and here I didn't use an auto-implemented property, and you'll see why in just a second. So we've got the properties that we want to support inside of our entity, but you'll remember that there were three properties that we needed to support in order to work with Azure Table Storage. We could either add those in by hand, or we can implement a type that is available to us in this storage client sample library. And we're going to use that storage client as kind of our API. So let's do that. It's called Table Storage Entity is what we want to implement. Before I do that, I need to go ahead and either add a reference to that DLL or go ahead and add that project in. So I can illustrate some of the pieces. I'm going to go ahead and add that project in. If you install to the default location, you'll find it under Windows. It's under Program Files, Windows Azure SDK, version 1, Samples, and storage client and the lib directory. And so I just added the project in. I'm going to add a project reference. So I'm going to add a reference to it. We'll add a project reference to storage client. While I'm at it, I'm going to add a reference to the .NET, ADO.NET Data Services client library, which is a system.data.services.clients. And so we're all set to go. Let me give myself that room back. Here I just want to implement table storage entity. And I can bring in its namespace, which is microsoft.samples.servicehosting.storageclient. Now what this type gives us is really the three properties that we need to implement: timestamp, partition key, as well as row key. It also gives us a little bit extra. If you're familiar with ADO.NET Data Services, you'll note that you need to tell it every what the primary key, if you will, for every entity is, and you do that by declaring a data service key attribute. And here we've obviously set ours to be partition key and row key. Now there's a little bit of extra going on in here, but that's the major functionality, and that's the major reason why we want to implement this type. It gives us another constructor that's a convenience. We'll see that in a little bit as well. So we've got these properties all set up. Let's go ahead and create a couple constructors. Here's my default constructor. Let me add another one. I've got a code snippet to do it. And here's my constructor. I think I'm missing a property here, and that's going to be the bottle price. And let's just go ahead and set the bottle price here. And we're good to go there. Cool. So now within these properties, and it's going to be, looks like I've got a typing. That's a double. Cool. Good to go. Okay. So now we're set to go. And okay. So we've kind of set this up, but what we need to do is set that partition key and row key. We support it now, but we need to set those, which is why I kind of created these two constructors to show you how you might do it in both ways. One thing you can do inside of this convenience constructor, I can just call into my basis constructor, and there's an overloaded constructor which sets the partition key and row key. And so I'm going to set the partition key. I'm going to set all of them with the same partition key. Now this is going to inhibit our scalability because they're all going to have to exist on the same node, but I only have a few here. And in future screencasts, maybe we'll talk about how to set this up for scalability. But for now, this will work. Now I want to set the row key. I'll just set that to my wine IDs. I'll just set that to my wine ID to string. So we're good there. We can do the same thing. I can go ahead inside of this default constructor, which we need to have because this is going to get called to deserialize. I'm going to go ahead and set this dot partition key equal to all wines. Now I don't know what the wine ID is here, so that's why I didn't use an automated auto-implemented property. So here I'm just going to set this dot row key equal to value dot to string. So now we're pretty much set up. We've got our wine class. It's ready to go. We can use this to pull data from storage, table storage, and add data into table storage. All we need to do is create a data context. If you're familiar with the ADO.NET Data Services, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. If you're not familiar with the ADO.NET Data Services, what you really need to know is that the data service context maintains the state between interactions, and that's to support things like optimistic concurrency. So you create this context type, and inside of it you expose these types of data service query types, and that's it. From there on out, you're able to essentially operate with objects and not worry about the complexity of making HTTP calls. Those data service query types that you're exposing represent a query that is ultimately represented by a URI. So it's a little bit more complex here because I can't just use a regular data service context from the ADO.NET Data Services client libraries, because we need to have that added functionality like signing the requests. So this storage client right here, this guy, inside of table storage, we implemented data service context. Excuse me, and I think we called it table storage data service context, and we implemented that functionality. So let's go ahead and do that. Let me go ahead and add in a my context. So I'm going to add in a new class. I'm going to just call coho context. table.cs, and we're going to implement table storage data service context. We'll bring in that namespace, and we're good to go. Now all I need to do, just like I told you, all I need to do is expose a data service query. So I'm going to do public data service query, bring in that namespace of type wine, and we'll just call it wines, and let's just have a getter. Inside of that getter, we'll return create query of type wine, and our entity set name is going to be wines. And that should be it. So we should be pretty much good to go now. Now, I've set this up appropriately. As I told you, table storage data service query, let me just show you what that functionality is real briefly. Give myself a little room here. And we'll just scroll down a little bit. But what you're going to see here is we wire up an event handler to the sending request event. And so here's our event handler, data context sending request. If we go ahead and take a look at what that event handler does, this is where it actually signs the request for us. And so we don't have to worry about signing those requests and going through all that work. If you want to see how complex that is, take a look at my other screencast on the REST API. It's non-trivial. So we get a lot for just implementing these types. So we're pretty much good to go. So I'm going to save this off. We'll close this class out. What I need to do now is I need to set up my configuration settings. So I need to tell essentially tell these libraries where my table storage exists. And so we do that by setting our configurations. Now, we don't set them up inside of the web role themselves inside of a web.config because we may have any number of these instances running. So we set them up inside of our cloud service project. And we do that by declaring the settings inside of my CSDef and then declaring what the values are in my CSConfig. So I'm just going to create a configuration settings node here, and inside of there I'm going to go ahead and add in my the settings that I want to support, which are account name, shared key, and table storage endpoint. This is the URL to my table storage. It's going to be a local URL, and then when we go to the cloud it'll point out at my the cloud. Shared key is the private key that you're given that we use to sign our messages. And when you create your account, you'll get one of these things. When you create your Windows Azure account and create the storage project, you'll get that. And then account name is your account name that you create inside of Windows Azure for your storage account. So let's go over to the CSConfig, and let's add the appropriate values. Now I've set up two sets of values here. One of them is for the local developer storage, and these settings are the same for everybody. So if you get these, you don't need to change them or look for your own personal version of the shared key. That's the same for everybody. The account name is devstoreaccount1. The storage endpoint points to 127.0.0.1 port 10,002, and the shared key is this big super long string. I've also got some settings for my personal account that I set up out on the portal. And we'll show you that at the very end of this screencast, because I'm going to swap these out and we'll call to the cloud to get our data. So I've now configured it. Let me go ahead and add in a just nice little class to kind of encapsulate the database logic. So I'm going to right click and choose add, and I'm just going to add a class. I'm going to call it CohoDB. And inside of CohoDB, I just want to add a couple statics. So we'll do a public static, and let's do a list of wine, and we'll return a collection of wines, and we'll just call it get wines. And here I'm just going to return, and we can do it in one line of code, or I can new up a Coho data context, and I can just return coho.wines.toList. And I can add one in for a public static void add wine that takes in a wine. And inside of here, let me go ahead and create my Coho data context. And here I can say Coho dot add object, and I want to add it to my wines set and add in my wine. And then I'll just say Coho dot save changes. And we're good to go. Let me compile, make sure I haven't done anything stupid. And everything seems to be working out well. So now I'm ready to go ahead and actually write the code to go ahead and inside of my UI. So let's go into ViewWines. Here's my ViewWines. This should be simple enough. I want to, when somebody clicks this button, I want to go ahead and redirect over to my Add Wine page. And on page load, I want to go ahead and bind up this grid to my wines. So let's do that. Let's go into this view wines. I want to go into the code behind here. Okay, my button was, I think, add wine button dot click, and let's do plus equals, and then this is object sender comma event args. We're going to do this inline using a lambda just to keep this a little bit quick. We'll just do a response.redirect to addwine.aspx, and that's good to go. And now I just can go fetch my wines. So let's do list of wine, wines equals cohodb.getwines, and then I've got my wine grid view.datasource equals wines, and then my wine grid view.databind. And we're good to go. This page is all done. Let me get the code going inside of my AddWine. AddWine's pretty simple. Inside of page load, what I want to do is just wire up the event handler for my save button. So save, I forget what I called it, save wine maybe. I'll have to take a look. Maybe it's not as simple as I might have led on. It's called save button. So save button dot, why am I not getting IntelliSense on that? Did I not put in, I don't have the ID set here. So there we go. So we'll say this dot save button dot click plus equals new event handler, oops, plus equals, and we'll just let the Visual Studio implement that for us. So inside of save button click, I want to go ahead and create a new wine. And so I've got a little code snippet to do that for me. It's because it's just a little time consuming to type this up. But what I do is I just new up a wine. I used an object initializer. I set my wine ID, my vintage, my bottle price, my short wine name, and my wine label URL from the appropriate controls, and doing some parsing where required. For my wine label URL, I've got a file upload, and I just prepend images/wines to that. So now all I need to do here is I need to just create my context again and add this wine to my context. So I'll say coho context coho equals new coho context, and I'll say coho excuse me, I can just use my convenience, my little very simple CohoDB class. So let's do that, make it much easier. CohoDB.addWine, and just add in my wine. And now I can just response.redirect to my viewwines.aspx. And we should be pretty much good to go. I should be able to test this thing up. Build succeeded. You know what? Let me do one more thing. I've got to, before I do this, inside of view wines, I've got, this is going to be a pretty ugly grid view. And so I'm going to go ahead and make some changes to that. And so I'm going to delete that, and I've got a version of this thing that I've already formatted. And I used the Visual Studio tools to format it, but I don't want to force you to have to sit through me doing that. So let's go ahead and run this thing up. All I did was change the way this thing looks. I'm going to go ahead and set my view wines as my start page. I'm going to run this thing up. Ah, this is great. I forgot to create the tables, the wines table, wine table inside of my database. And Visual Studio actually went ahead and figured that out and said, hey, we've not specified this project. Do you want to create that? I'm going to go ahead and say no. And so, because I want to illustrate how you would normally do it. Normally, you would right-click here, think this thing's going to try and run up without that table created, and it should just fail. Let me close this out. Stop that. What happens is, this is really kind of cool. What happens, I can right-click on my cloud service project right here, and I can just choose to create test storage tables. If we take a look in SQL Server, you can see I don't have a database called Azure Store, and that's the default. SQL Server Express is going to, by default, be where we're going to actually implement the developer storage, so or the kind of developer version of the cloud table storage. It's going to a database is going to get built inside of SQL Express with the appropriate tables. The way that works is you right-click here on the cloud service project and choose create test storage tables. What it does is it looks through your roles and it looks for any types that expose any derivatives of data service query. It takes all of those and infers the table structure and actually builds the tables for you. It's very similar to how we do it in the cloud itself when we create tables. Only a bit different in the cloud. In the cloud, there's a type under table storage. There's a method under table storage that will create those tables for you. You just simply need to call that method. And I called that out on my blog. Now, if we go back into SQL Server and I refresh here, you'll see that we're now going to have an Azure Store. We're going to have an Azure Store database created. And if we go ahead and down look here, you see I've got a wines table created. And we've got all of the properties that I wanted in there, and then the three that are required for us to implement. And so that's going to be how we're going to be able to simulate that cloud environment. Now we can run this thing up. Obviously, we don't have any wines. We haven't added any yet. Let's go click Add Wine. We'll redirect us over to our wine page. I need to, before I go any further, I need to add some wines into my project. And so let me do that. Let me just go ahead here. I have some wines. I have some wines already stored out. And so let's see if I can just find them. Azure Store. Let's see, starter code. There we go. I'm going to grab these images and copy them over to my project. I think I need to stop this to do that. So let me grab these wines and copy them over here. These are just images of the wines that I want to use. And so this is just to make it look a little bit prettier. Now we can run this thing back up again now that I have that images directory. It just has a bunch of images of the wine labels. And so now there's my page. Click Add Wine. Go to Browse. Let's go ahead and browse down to that folder where I just added those wines. So that's under Computer, C, Development, Azure, Screencasts, Development Part 2, and that's going to be under Working, and Images. And then I can go into Wines. Let me go ahead and view Details. And we want to grab one that's 160. So let's add a Zinfandel from 2001. We'll give it a wine ID of 1. We'll call it Bagby Zin. And we'll say, I think it was 2001. And let's say it's $10.99. And let's go ahead and save that. Right now it's getting stored in developer storage. We just got redirected back to View Wines. And you can see that was added out here. Let me go ahead and add another one in here. Let's go ahead and grab another one. Let's grab one Pinot. And let's give it a wine ID of 2, and we'll just call it Bagby Pinot. And we'll say a vintage, I forget what it was. We'll just say 2002, and the price, we'll just give it $199. It's a nice wine. And so we've got, you can see this works. And although it's not all that good looking, we're going to make it look a lot better when we get to our next couple of screencasts and we start implementing some Silverlight. But the real key here is that we are accessing table storage in a very simple manner. Let me show you how we can just, by changing my configuration settings, I'm going to go ahead and now call into the cloud here where I've already set this up. And let me just, I think I can just uncomment like that. And right now we're going to be calling into my account. Now I've already added in a couple lines into this account, and so we're not going to have to worry about adding any in, but should see just how easy it is for us to access the cloud. And there we are. You can see all of the lines that I've stored and added in into the cloud that currently exists. I hope this screencast adequately illustrated to you how easy it is to work with Azure Table Storage and gave you some insights on how to do that in your applications. In the next screencast, we're going to illustrate how to expose services, custom services, from your Windows Azure hosted application.